Hello and welcome to this evening. I'm going to stand up so I can see everybody at the back. I'm Alexandra Jones and I'm the Chief Executive of Centre for Cities, which is a think tank dedicated to understanding and improving UK city economies. And I'm really pleased to see you all in here, you all here in Middlesbrough, for the first in our series of events on Metro Mayors. Because the election of Metro Mayors, the kind of mayors of a number of local authorities together in May 2017, it's a pretty historic moment, really. We're going to see the elections certainly here in Liverpool City Region, in Greater Manchester, in Sheffield City Region, the North East, maybe a few more places, maybe not, who knows. But it's a really new moment, actually, for the country and for the way that people take decisions and the way that potentially money works. The minute London is the only UK city with a metro mayor, so with a mayor across multiple local authorities. But around the world, powerful local mayors with real decision-making powers, with real kind of control over money, are the norm rather than the exception. And in fact, London's mayor, compared to international mayors, isn't very powerful at all. And what we're seeing around the world is a shift, actually, with people wanting to take more decisions locally, wanting to make sure that when decisions are made, they understand the local area. They're about the local area. And when it's decisions about things like transport or housing, that actually those are things that are of the local area where local people know better. And having a mayor is an opportunity, I think, to make sure some of those decisions are made more locally. I mean, the new mayor of Tees Valley has huge potential to be somebody who's got a really high national profile, somebody who's going out to bat to get public money, to get private money, to make sure the area is well known, that its reputation is enhanced, that people understand that the kind of diverse economy here, what's going on, all its strengths. But I think that potential can only really be realised if there's a really vigorous public debate in the run-up to those elections about what the area wants. What should the mayor do? What's their role? What should they be doing? What do you want them to be doing? And what we found, we did a poll, and there's some on your seats, there's some of the findings of that. And what we found is that only a third of people in this area actually knew that the Metro Mayor was going to happen. Now, around a year off from the election, that's not bad, but it's not great. There's a lot more to be done. And one of the things we want to do as an organisation that has argued that Metro Mayors could help raise the profile of cities, could help make sure that there's more local decision-making. We've argued that for many years. We wanted to help make sure this debate's happening, that actually we're talking to people, we're talking to the public, we're talking to the professionals about what's wanted, what should happen, what this should look like. So the findings there, that's local polling, just to understand what people think are the big priorities in their areas. And you can see it for yourselves. Some points to highlight. Over half of the people we spoke to in the area want the new mayors to have more powers than local council leaders. So there does seem to be an appetite for somebody who's able to kind of take big decisions. And I do know I'm sitting next to Councillor Jeffrey.
Yeah.
When asked what's the most important priority, we're going to hear from you in just a moment.
Yeah, that's okay.
When asked what's the most important priority for their city, over a third of people said healthcare. Actually, interestingly, that's not in the new mayor's remit, only in Greater Manchester. Housing and transport were quite near the top. When you're thinking about some of the other issues. And when you're asked, given what the mayor can do, what do you think really matters? Actually, a majority of people thought investing in road and rail networks, improving adult skills, and more affordable housing. And those are things that will be under the mayor's control. And I think one of the interesting things about the mayor is if you get it right, what we've seen in London and elsewhere is it's not just the formal powers you get, it's the informal ones. Because congestion charging wasn't in Ken's remit, but he just did it. And some of the things that Boris did around the airport were things that he just did around the police. He sorted it out because of the informal power he had to represent the area and to have a big debate. And I think there's an opportunity to talk about that as well. If London is any guide, and it's not, I'm not suggesting in any way it's a blueprint for the area, but in terms of the powers the mayor has, they can grow. So if you want that, I think there's a conversation to be had about where next. But the first conversation is about where now. What does this look like? What are the first 100 days, say, for the mayor? What are the priorities? And that's why I'm delighted that we've got this panel here to kind of kickstart a debate that we'll be having over many months. We'll be doing more polling, more events. But I'm delighted to be joined by the panel. So, as I said, Councillor Sue Jeffrey, leader of Redcar and Cleveland Council. I think you've just stepped down from being leader of the Combined Authority this week, last week?
Last week.
Last week.
Dave took over. Who's there?
Delighted to see you.
Sat there.
But now I know you're there. And you've been a housing professional as well, so I think you've got real kind of expertise in that area as well, which will be really important. We've got Professor John Mawson, who's director of the Institute for Local Governance, which is a Northeast research and knowledge transfer partnership between the region's five universities, 12 unitary councils, and other public bodies as well. So really interested to hear your perspective on kind of what the priorities are and where next. And Rachel Anderson, Head of Policy and Representation at the North East Chamber of Commerce. So I think your insights from the kind of business perspective will be really crucial, making sure we're understanding what businesses want to see. So that's plenty from me. What we've asked is from each of you is some of the key policies you'd like to see the Mayor address in his or her first 100 days. So Sue, can I ask you to kick off?
Yeah, certainly. Thanks very much indeed, Alex. And I think, where would I start with all this? 100 days, that's not very long, is it? When I was elected as council leader at Redcar and Cleveland, I said I'd do things in the first 100 days. Well, Carl, one of my colleagues, is sat at the back there, and he'll tell you that could end up as being a bit of a noose around your neck because people actually say to you, why are you going to do it then? And you do the best you can, and 100 days in relation to a mayor isn't very much at all. I think as well, I need to start from the perspective of, I think we've done devolution pretty well in the Tees Valley anyway, and I think we're doing devolution pretty well now. And, you know, the whole idea of a mayor, OK, we've got to have one because that's what government has said, no deal, no mayor, you know, no mayor, no deal. And so that's where we've left ourselves. But the fact is that if we had the choice, I don't think I'd be going for a mayor. And that would be my starting point in all this. However, we are where we are and we have to think about what we're going to do if and when our mayor comes for election. So my three things I think that a mayor should be thinking about if they were elected in May 2017. I think the first thing I would say very clearly is that they would have a job to accelerate progress in relation to devolution and the stuff that we're doing anyway within the Tees Valley. So not come in and change the agenda or rethink or restart, but to accelerate the progress of the effective work that we're already underway with. And I'll talk about a little bit more about that in a minute. The second thing I think that would be really important will be about starting to change the narrative about the Tees Valley and the way we are perceived by people out there. It is absolutely clear to me that we have a huge amount going on here that is effective and good, but people don't know about it, and we need to change that and make that a different story. And the third thing I say that I think that the mayor would have to do in their first 100 days is actually secure the confidence in our priorities of the citizens who will have voted, however many that may be, the councils, the businesses, and particularly government, and actually ensure that government lives up to its devolution promise and actually devolves power and trusts and enables the Tees Valley to get on with doing jobs for itself through the elected mayor. So just to talk very, very quickly, because I've only got 5 minutes about those, accelerating progress around what? Transport, our four priorities. We need to move more quickly on those, including a new Tees crossing, improvements to Banktop Station, electrification of the line from North Allerton. Four things, four priorities. Secondly, education skills, employment, schools, further education, bringing those together, coordinating them better, a step change in the way that we deliver education and skills to enable us to actually get people into the 25,000 jobs a year that we're going to create going forward. Level 4, 50% of those jobs are going to be. So, you know, we need the skills, we need the people to enable that to happen. Absolutely crucial. Industrial and urban regeneration. We're talking about a mayoral development corporation. We already have a shadow one for the South Tees area, a land commission, 20,000 new homes by 2026, £3 billion worth of private sector investment, an ambitious programme for growth within the Tees Valley, hugely important. And then finally, business and the economy, actually ensuring that we're delivering that low-cost, high-value economy that we know can deliver more in terms of GDP to the UK as a whole, and know that we can do it if we develop our USP better, which is about reducing energy and carbon costs, minimising waste and developing our local supply chains. The circular economy, Paul Booth would call it if he was here, but that's what we need to do to ensure that things go better. So really important about accelerating progress. Telling the story more effectively, a diverse industrial base, significant opportunities, innovation, enterprise, an industrial heritage, but also an industrial future, a high quality of life, low-cost housing, a wealth of natural and cultural assets. How many people have seen the headline over the last numbers of days? Our people are our greatest asset. We need to sell that much better than we do now. And it's there. Our secret is too well kept. We need to let everybody out there know that we are the Tees Valley. We're here and we're up for business and we can do it and we will do it. And that's a job for the mayor. And as I've already said, securing the confidence of those people, the electorate, councils, business, and most importantly, government. Because at the end of the day, what is going to make the difference is that the government delivers on its promise of devolution. And that means that it has to come up with the goods in terms of resources and funding and powers to enable us to deliver on the agenda that we know is right for the Tees Valley. So it's not about huge change. It's not about tearing everything up that we've done and starting again. It's about delivering better, more quickly, providing that focus and ensuring that as the Tees Valley we actually live up to our potential. So that's what I think should happen if the Mayor got elected.
Thanks, Sue. I think that's very powerful. And I do take your point that a number of people have taken the pragmatic approach to having a mayor as opposed to the enthusiastic.
Yes. Pragmatic is definitely the word I think I would apply.
But I think really powerful kind of arguments there about not starting again, but actually building on progress and making that faster. So really interesting. John, I'd be interested in your thoughts on this.
Okay, so I was asked to relatively short notice to step in for a Teesside University representative, and I thought I would say first of all that I'm not speaking on behalf of Durham University, but in a personal capacity. I want to talk about some of my experiences in working in strategic authorities, and it will indicate how old I am, that I worked for Strathclyde Regional Council and West Midlands County Council, but both authorities, I think, display very interesting and innovative benefits from operating at a strategic level, which I want to draw on in my points. And my 100 days is drawing up an agenda for the Mayor, so I'm cheating.
That's all right.
My first observation is that I think looking at the organisational capacity of cities and regions across the UK, Tees Valley has always been really well focused, organised. It has a sense of identity. So I think we're building on what is already a success, but one faced with very serious economic problems. So my first observation, having worked closely with Teesside University over the last 7 years, is that it is, of the five universities, an extremely effective vehicle for dealing with knowledge exchange and process into the local economy and community. And I think the Mayor should immediately think about the contribution that this university and others in the region can make to delivering a successful economy in the North East. I guess it's one of the largest employers, certainly purchases, certainly brings in students, brings in additional expenditure, but also works in technology, provides business support, provides a profile for Teesside. So I think in whatever way the combined authority and mayor develop, they must really build on the work of Teesside University. I think my second point is the real advantages that operating on a strategic scale provide for local authorities, private and voluntary sector. Specialist expertise is available, economies of scale, tackling problems that go across boundaries, identifying opportunities and challenges, and I think particularly giving the opportunity for risk-taking and innovation. I'll give you two examples I've experienced. I note that a combined authority has secured £15 million of additional expenditure per annum, which is per capita the second highest amount allocated to the bidders from different parts of the country. So already Tees Valley has done well here, but £15 million, not a lot of money, and I would suggest, however, a real opportunity to mobilise additional funding, investment and economic development. And I'm going to go back decades to give you, there's no one single way in which you use financial instruments to mobilise development. But I was Director of Economic Development in 1981 at West Midlands County Council. Unemployment went up by a third in 6 months, and we lost 250,000 manufacturing jobs in nearly 2 years. Okay, we couldn't tackle that, but what we did do was establish a venture capital institution, a public-private venture capital institution. We had 10 million, very much like the 15 million, from what was called a 2p rate, which we could do whatever we did, wished to do so. We put it into an investment vehicle. Many medium-sized companies were going to the wall because of high interest rates and absence of long-term equity finance. We stepped into a gap in the market we developed an investment fund, a regional unit trust with Lazards. We mobilised something like £20 million of investment funds by working through pension funds and other organisations. We invested for profit and return, but the profit was recycled when we sold the businesses. We had something like a portfolio of 20 to 35 medium-sized manufacturing companies employing 5,000 people. We continually invested. We were a flexible investor. The private sector recognised that. It was run by a board of councillors and private sector investors and specialists in investment institutions. Cambridge Economics did an analysis. Because we were investing for profit and recycled, our jobs cost nothing. At the time, regional investment grants cost £35 million per job. There was no additionality cost to the private sector because we were addressing a gap. And I think you'll be interested to know that that vehicle, that company, was controlled by the seven councils and lasted until 2013 from 1981. And the only reason it closed down was because the authorities concerned were very short of capital and had to raise the funds from it. Now, I'm not suggesting you do that here. What I'm suggesting is there's all sorts of innovative things you can do with private investment and working with the public and private sectors to mobilise opportunities and tackle problems at any one point of time. My second experience was at Strathclyde, where we identified 121 areas of priority disadvantaged communities. Multiple problems, health, low pay, ill health, unemployment. The capital programmes of the authority and the councils were targeted at these 121 areas, and we collaborated and coordinated. And now, when I go back all that time since, part of Glasgow's renewal is that most of these deprived communities have recovered and the individuals have a better life than they had before. And that's a social and economic strategy that arises from an ability to operate in a strategic way across boundaries. So I think strategic working is a significant opportunity that arises from the present situation. I think the other thing to say is that the benefits of economic growth, if they arise, hopefully, should be shared by all parts of the community, and we should ensure that the mechanisms of growth, the investment and benefits, are also delivered to those who are in a disadvantaged situation. And strategic work can actually address many of these issues, not just collaboration activity at the local council level, but also across boundaries. Examples, I would say, is you cannot separate the social economy from the economy. Though there are issues around low pay, health and safety, benefit take-up, disability, accessibility for transport or economic questions. And one thing I really would say as an economist is that the propensity of people to spend is far higher amongst disadvantaged people and communities. So if you ensure that money goes back into those people and communities, they have a high propensity to spend, and the multiplier impact is far higher. So there is a real economic benefit from having a strategic approach to this issue. I think a key advantage of the mayor and the combined authority is a strong voice, as has been already said. So I think that that should be deployed to push forward central government to give us more powers, not sitting on our and waiting for civil servants. I think we should use the contacts we've got with local ministers and people like Lord Heseltine to push the government. We should collaborate and lobby with bodies who've already been successful, like core cities, key cities, trade unions, chambers of commerce. We should work with bodies like the Northern Plan to have a wider Northern agenda, not just a Teesside agenda. The mayors need to work together to tackle what is a serious North-South divide, what is a serious reduction in funding for local authorities, which would in turn inhibit what we can do to recover. So I've just got a couple more. Performance of government departments, we've got to keep a very clear eye on it, because for 30 years they've kept on talking about joined upness, collaboration, etc., and they've not delivered. Last two points are going to be engagement and ownership of citizens is important in any complex structure like this. Okay, politicians have had to be pragmatic, but we now need to get them on board. And is the present local government scrutiny process adequate to deal with that task? And at that point, I'll stop.
Thank you. A huge amount covered there in the time, and I'm conscious. I always say 5 minutes, and it's really mean. And I feel bad because there's so much more the speakers can say. But a lot covered about the opportunities, I think, of working strategically. So really interesting. Rachel, can I come to you on the business?
I'm going to stand up because I'm not very tall, so you can see me from the back. I think just a couple of things to say really before I start. I know you're all here because you're all desperate for some relief, for something else to talk about except the referendum, and this is probably it. What I'm going to say to you is really kind of, as we are today, I make no reference to what we should do whether or the vote or anything, and that's the last thing I'll say on it, so it's as we are today. We've been asked for 5 minutes, and we've asked for the sort of three distinct policies that a mayor would implement in their 100 days in office, and in that context I'm not going to mention transport. It clearly is the highest priority that we've got as an area, but I am not sure that the amount of traction that you could get on something over your first 100 days, other than saying hello with the Tees Valley and this is what we want, we'd be working somebody else's timetable. So I've gone for three things that really I think a mayor could kick off, get underway and get something moving on very quickly and do things. The first one of those is an industrial strategy for the Tees Valley. Successive governments of every colour have summarily failed to produce an industrial strategy for the country. But that doesn't stop us producing an industrial strategy for the Tees Valley and a strategy for ourselves. We've got a strategic economic plan, certainly, and it's under review at the moment, and we'll provide building blocks for that. But there's an awful lot more that we could do, and a lot of the work has already been done on it. If you look at some of the work that somebody like NEPIC have done on what would really get the process industry and the chemical industry motoring and dealing with places like Antwerp and places like that, and Stan would love me for saying this if he was here, but I think... You know, actually, if we looked at it, and a mayor going across all the areas looked at it in the round and said, what is it that could really make a huge difference and leap the Tees Valley forward? I think something that produces that strategy that goes beyond a strategic economic plan and really looks at those strategic relationships that we could have with other areas, not just in the UK. I think that's something that a mayor should really kick off. Having the SSI funds and the flexibility that we've had around those SSI funds, even though they came out of a very bad situation, I think that's probably pointed the way a little bit to the real prize of devolution. Not about the money. Money, 15 million a year. Well, Redcar and Cleveland are going to lose about half of that in 1 year, so, you know, alone. I don't what the rest, actually, it's not about that kind of money. But what it's about is the flexibility to spend money that already comes into the region, and that flexibility to solve very local issues and take very local opportunities without having to sort of chew through Whitehall for 25 weeks before you get to see a penny of it. And actually, I think that's the real prize. If we can do that, and we've got a real strategy that says these are our strengths, our industrial, our sectoral strengths, and this is what we could do with them, and get the companies to tell us what they could do if they just had the shackles taken off them, then I think that's something that we could really make a huge difference for the Tees Valley. So I think a mayor should kick that off. Second, I'm going to go for education and skills. Just as Zoe Lewis walks in the room. It's the absolutely most common comment that any of our members make. We had a meeting of our Middlesbrough members this morning. Some of you were in the room were there. And without, almost without fail, every business in the room said, we are struggling to recruit, we are struggling to get people with the right skills. One person actually said, I could employ 10 more people if I could find the people with the right skills. It was mentioned to us in the Heseltine report. It was mentioned very forcefully in the Heseltine report. And we've all known for a while that attainment in some areas isn't good enough. Careers advice isn't great. Actually, I think it's something that a new mayor could do is really work with our education providers, whether that's schools or colleges or universities, and pull things together. There's a lot that happens piecemeal at the moment, and a lot of individual initiatives and things that people think are a good idea and kick off, and the Chamber is as guilty as anyone with that. But actually, somebody who goes cross-boundary, cross-area, cross-sector, and has those types of powers as a mayor, even though not so much over education, but actually they could act as a figurehead to pull that together, and I think that would be really important. And the third area, and Sue alluded to this, but I'm going to say the same thing, but in a slightly different way, is around confidence. And I think the mayor is going to absolutely have to be the figurehead of the Tees Valley, mm-hmm. and have to be confident. And yes, they have to gain the confidence of the public, the confidence of the business, but actually they have to go striding out there with confidence and say, this is the Tees Valley, this is who we are. Heseltine's actually given that to us, because what his report said in a nutshell was, actually, you're doing okay, you know what you need to do, you know where you're going, and actually we think that's right. And that's a big boost in confidence in the Tees Valley. And actually, I think anybody who is putting themselves forward as that figurehead of the Tees Valley, and make no mistake, somebody like Luciana Berger, if she wins in Liverpool, will do it. Andy Burnham, we don't know if he'll be or not, but somebody like a Manchester Met is going to do that. We need to do that as well. And we can't be the sort of seen and not heard area anymore. We can't be the one that only speaks when we're spoken to anymore. Actually, we've got to go striding in there and say, this is what we want out of devolution. This is what we want out of a Northern Powerhouse. It was interesting to read this on the chairs on the Centre for City West House and look at some of the answers that people in Manchester had given. They have a completely different set of priorities to see the world completely differently from the way we do, which means that we're going to have to make our case for it. And so I want to see a mayor with all the confidence that they can possibly muster to go out there and speak for all of us and say, this is the Tees Valley, who we are. We can make a real difference to the UK economy, and this is how we want to do it, and we want your backing to do it. And so those are the three things that I think a first 100 days could be.
Excellent. Well, I can see the mayor is going to have a lot to do, but it's interesting to hear some of the kind of consensus about some of those areas that will be critical. But I'd love to hear from you about your thoughts, comments, questions for the panel. And if you could just kind of put your hand up and say who you are and where you're from. And I did promise that if everybody was a little bit shy at the beginning, that I would come straight to you. Would you just say who you are and from the
Michael
FSB?
Michael Jones, Chair of the Federation of Small Businesses in Tees Valley. There's been a lot of push towards this mayor, and I think at the end of the day, I think there's an ideal opportunity. But nothing has come out so far of how we're going to elect him. How is he going to actually get through the system? I'll rephrase that, yes. Got to be political correctness, haven't we? Yes. But didn't mean any disrespect, honest. But at the end of the day, you know, is it going to be a political person that's going to be put forward? Yeah. Is there going to be any independent people? How are they going to actually? How is the process going to be that we're going to get this person? Because they need to work with all of the political people, and it'd be interesting to see some people that's representative of the business community on there, or the third sector community. You know, does it have to be a political person? That's what I'm saying. You know, what's the process?
That's a great question. Are there any more? while you're thinking of questions, and I'm, as I say, I've got a few people I've got my eyes on to pick on, if nobody puts their hand up. But are you happy to come back on that?
Yeah, process. Well, we're not there yet, is the first thing to say. And that was the point I was trying to make at the beginning. So we've the mayoral combined authority order has just been laid with Parliament. So that's going through at the moment. That creates the right for us to have a mayor in election on the... Does anybody know what date in May it is?
4th
of May. So it's ingrained in people's memories already, you see. That's fabulous. On the 4th of May 2017... What we haven't yet is determined as a Tees Valley what powers we want to give to that mayor and how we want that mayor to operate alongside the local authorities. Because I think we talk about Boris and the Morris model, but this is a very different model, actually. Because what this is going to be, it is going to be somebody sitting alongside the five local authority leaders and business, because the LEP is there, fully represented on the combined authority, and we'll be working collectively as we do now. And this person will come in as, we hope, chair of that body, well, as chair of that body, and with some specific powers, but most of all about bringing together and coming together with the people that are already there and helping us deliver on the agenda that we know is the right agenda for the Tees Valley. Who will stand? Your guess is as good as mine. But obviously the political parties will all put candidates forward. We know in mayoral elections that we've had in Hartlepool, Middlesbrough and those sorts of places that independents tend to put their names forward as well. But I think it's what's important is the ambition of that person for the Tees Valley and what they want to see happen within the Tees Valley. And I think what's equally important is what we don't want is a figure that's going to come in and be divisive. We want somebody who's going to come in and work with what we've got, because I don't think we're doing badly at the moment. In fact, I think we're doing pretty bloody well, and we just need to do more of it. And I think that's the really important thing.
Other thoughts, questions? Yes.
My name's Jordan. I'm from Middlesbrough Council. I'm a council there. To me, the thing is to note that, you know, at the moment we have Westminster and Whitehall making these decisions 250 miles away. The idea of a combined authority was to make those decisions close to home, close to the ground, where we know what's happening. But I think, for me, the key is to make sure that there are enough checks and balances on the new mayoral system to ensure that we don't just end up with, you know, one person far removed from everything in Whitehall making the decisions to one person far removed from the decisions,
yeah, absolutely.
Just a little bit closer to the side making those decisions, and about making sure that everybody is properly represented and everyone is properly accountable. I know that as a local councillor, if people don't like the decisions I make, I'll get voted out of office. I hope that doesn't happen, but that's always an option. And we need to make sure that the new mayor is subject to these checks and balances as well. That's just my concern.
Yeah. No, I think that's a really important point, and one that it would be good to come back to, because clearly there's a different system, as you say, to the London one.
Yeah.
In other places, it's a two-thirds model, so, you know, 2/3 of the councillors can veto decisions made by the mayor, and what's interesting is in some areas they're saying, is that strong enough? You know, is that strong enough checks and balances? What else do you need? And other areas are saying, well, is that too strong? And I think that, you know, it'd be interesting to get the panel's debates and to hear from the audience about what you think good would look like in this. You know, what are the right checks and balances? There's some more hands going up, so just here and then there.
Michael Bell, private person. Why is there a separate Tees authority rather than the whole North East?
Okay, great question. Thank you. Just here.
David Walker. I come from an urban development background. Just a comment really on the mayor, I think, that was picked up earlier. And there's a comment and there's a question. The comment is that clearly the role that is involved by the mayor is one that immediately throws you down a business-led person, because you've got a limited amount of investment, you're going to leave a job from the private sector. You're then going to look at the priorities in the area, and you're going to kind of do it as you would as a businessman would do it, in terms of what are the real priorities, where do I make my investments, whether that be skills and training or hard physical work or housing, whatever it might be. It will have a catalytic effect and impact on the wider Tees Valley, and therefore I would be spending the money wisely and in the right areas, so prioritisation around that. And I have no strong feeling whether it's someone from political background or from business background. My question is, how do we in the Tees Valley make sure that that any candidates who are wishing to come forward understand that fully and understand what the role really means for the Tees Valley? And it's beyond the political, because I suspect a number of people will look at this and say, well, that's going to be politicians going to come forward. And we know all political parties will put candidates forward for that. But is that the right thing for the area?
Yeah.
And how do we actually get across the message that it's a broader kind of input we need, it's a broader kind of leadership we need? Yes, it's political, but it's also business.
Great question. And then there's a question over here.
David Walsh, Recreation Council. I'll say three things very quickly. I think the first is in terms of the individual who may become the mayor. That person's got some political background. I think we've got to remember that, say, for the last 10 years, local authorities have been working in a very different fashion to the old traditional methods that certainly members of the panel remember, working to a cabinet system, which actually hones down skills in terms of actually having to make organic changes and be very responsible for them, whereas in the past, in a sense, very much hands up. So in a sense, many of the political candidates who come forward, I think, would have those skills anyway. Just two comments in terms of the first 100 days. And again, you know, maybe problems in terms of ability to answer this. I think the first is, in a document I've seen, and I've just speed read it at the moment, I'll read it more fully tomorrow. I've noticed you talk about knowledge spillover, and I'm really pleased that's in there. Because one of the first places I think the mayor, that he or she should need to be talking to in the first week, will be the people who run, certainly, the Materials Process Institute at Grangetown. Mm-hmm. And secondly, the people who are in the centre, because they're the two best, if you like, centres of knowledge spillover in sectors.
Sure,
in terms
okay.
of process engineering and chemicals.
Yeah.
That we actually have in the country, probably not just the region,
okay.
not just Teesside, but actually in the country. That then needs to be built on by actually engaging then higher education
okay.
with those centres. And here I think there is an issue which is going on at the moment, which I think is a crying shame.
Yeah.
We fought to try and stop the SSI closure.
Sure.
We fight to keep a lot of industries alive. But, you know, we've had to see what seems to be a unilateral decision by Durham University to go out of the Stockton campus. Which, if it's implemented, I think will be very, very retrograde, because it will mean the loss of the Durham branding in Stockton. That's not to include anything against Teesside, but
sure,
just to say
yeah.
it's stronger with them than
yeah.
without them.
So
even at this late moment, is there the ability of the Teesside to actually talk to Durham to try and get them to reverse their decisions?
So there's something specific on that, and there's something kind of wider about the mayor and needing to make the most of knowledge spillovers and be able to talk to institutions and make sure that these conversations are happening if these situations like the Durham one arises. Okay, I'm going to go back to the panel for some responses on that and then go out and get lots of comments, because I think talking to the panel earlier, I think they were very keen that we have a debate, and there may be some things that people want to come back on, and then I'll kind of wrap up after that. So if you've got questions, if you've got comments, please be ready, is what I'm saying. But, I mean, some great questions there. Checks and balances. You know, what does good look like? How do you make sure the mayor is just, you know, not going rogue? And kind of slightly, not the same, but linked to that. I mean, how do you make sure that this is a candidate who understands their role is not just politics, but actually about kind of business and making the most of business investment? I mean, on those two points, and I'll come back to the two in a second. Rachel, have you got some thoughts about, you know, from a business perspective, what kind of person would you want to see, and what are some of the checks and balances you'd be interested in seeing?
Well, I mean, I think there is a reasonable history of independent mayors being elected when it's a single mayoral candidate. That said, it's probably hard to see where good candidates are going to come from that have a fully broad Tees Valley wide appeal.
Sure.
Somebody in Darlington may not recognise somebody in who's sort of big in Hartlepool, shall we say, and I think that's going to be, and I think it's going to be very difficult for an independent candidate to have that appeal. Probably the only person who could do it, should he want to, that which he won't, is Steve Gibson.
Yeah.
You know, if Steve Gibson sort of put up for it, then he would have that kind of appeal. But there's no way he would. So I think it's always very difficult for independents and for business people if they don't have a very, very good PR machine to sort of be able to do that. And whether we'll see one come forward, I'm not entirely sure about that. I imagine we will. I imagine we'll have some come forward. It's always an awful lot easier for a party political figure with a sort of party canvassing machine behind them to do things like that. I think in terms of checks and balances, well, that's democracy, isn't it? And I think the elected mayor is going to be such a visible position that it's people are going to be able to hold them to account very well. And I think, you know, in that way, they're not going to be able to run off as a megalomaniac power-crazed lunatic. I make no parallels with any of the mayors in the country there. And I think it's going to be a very visible position, and I don't think there's going to be a lot of places to hide if you screw it up, is what I would say.
Okay.
Please don't tweet that. but I think what I would say with checks and balances is the other way as well. What I would like to see is a mayor that is robust enough not to be subsumed by a lot of councillees and not kind of going to the sort of swamp of the public sector that it can sometimes be, and be sort of dragged down by minutiae and detail. So I kind of go slightly the other way on checks and balances, I think.
Okay, interesting. John, I'd be interested in your reflections on kind of the checks and balances, and also that point about kind of you're not here on behalf of Durham University, but knowledge spillovers and some of the ways you can kind of make the most of those.
Okay, so taking the first one, you mentioned checks and balances. I think that the process that the government's engaged in what they call devolution, which I don't actually think is devolution.
That's a whole other session.
Yeah, I don't want to go there, but I thought I'd mention it anyway. It seems to me that there's been an almighty rush, and councils, the private sector and others have been forced into producing strategies and bids at very short notice. Ideally, I suspect all parties concerned would have wanted to consult and engage far more with their communities, the private sector, voluntary sectors. Pragmatism has been necessary in this case in the short term to get the powers. However, I note that the National Audit Office and the House of Commons Select Committee have both made it absolutely clear that from now on they're expecting and recommending to see a much higher level of engagement in the forward development of the work of combined authorities, not just being a sort of higher level strategic agenda, but that every effort should be made to engage people. That in itself, this will only work if there's an engagement and ownership.
Yeah.
And this is a very complex second level of activity. And it's quite difficult to expect ordinary citizens in the short term to fully understand who's responsible for what, etc. So I think that it's necessary not merely to have a scrutiny committee, which is difficult enough with councillors from five authorities to start working together, but I think Sue has said this to the Select Committee, that are there going to be the resources for council scrutiny to properly monitor what is going on? And secondly, it does seem to me, if you look at the devolved nations in London, there are civic forums created to involve the environmental community, the voluntary sector, the green sector, religious groups, as well as community groups, to actually participate with these strategic groups. And I think that is the way that we have to go forward to get that check and balance.
Great, thank you.
Quickly on the Durham University issue, I think Councillor Walsh is absolutely right that in the modern knowledge economy, it's vitally important that knowledge is developed in the real world with the private sector, but also with research, and that's what all universities are trying to do now. Yes, there should be strong links to the existing expertise that's already here. As far as Durham University is concerned, I can't speak on behalf of the university at all. I'm clear, having talked to our new Vice Chancellor, that he is deeply committed to Durham University contributing to the region and local areas. He's very keen, for my discussions with him, to work with Tees Valley. It might not mean quite the same presence, but I mean the university's only up the road, and it's not just about physical presence. The research community in Durham can work with the private sector in Teesside very easily.
All right, thank you. And Sue, I just wanted to give you a chance to respond, I suppose, particularly on that, why are these separate to the North East and anything on the checks and balances, then I want to go out.
I get the separate to the North East question.
Sorry,
that's great.
That.
No, that's fine. I mean, I think the North East was fine. I did a year as chief exec of the North East Assembly. I understand the North East boundary, but the fact is it didn't work for us. And we have had to be practical and experience-based, and we've had to do business on a boundary that's working for us. And long before devolution, the current round of devolution came along, we discovered that we could cooperate very effectively as five local authorities and business and the other sectors working together as a Tees Valley. And that is what we've done, and that is what we're working on. That does not mean to say that we will not work in partnership with the North East. We will, and we will continue to on lots of things, but we will also look south to Yorkshire. We will look across to the North West. We will look wherever we need to look to be able to do the best business, to be able to deliver for the Tees Valley. And that's what it is about. It is about being practical and not being hung up by geography, because if we get hung up by geography, we will never, ever, ever do anything, because we will never conclude an agreement on that. So call it the Tees Valley, call it Teesside, call it Yorkshire, call it what you like. But as far as I'm concerned, it's five local authorities, business, and us collectively doing business for the people of the Tees Valley. And that's what's important.
Great. Did you want to say anything on checks and balances, or should I go out more
widely? I'll just say very, very quickly, and I think just to reassure you, I suppose, as much as anything else, that this process of checks and balances is something that we're looking at the moment as the five local authorities with the LEP, Local Enterprise Partnership. It will be subject to consultation over the next numbers of weeks. We need to get it right. It needs to be right for us. It will be different in different places. It will be what's you know, we need to find what is the right arrangement for us here in the Tees Valley, what works for us. And my view on that is that we need to have clear and defined powers for the mayor, ensure that they're able to act in the way that Rachel described and others have described, and be able to take executive action where they need to, but they do that in an accountable way and are held to account by the local authority leaders and scrutiny and everything else, and that needs to be written in effectively. And just a very quick example of that, the West Midlands, or these West Midlands agreement is already starting to talk about on budgets that if the mayor's budget, for example, isn't agreed, then the local authority leaders then take responsibility that back to themselves and do that themselves. So, you know, there's those sorts of checks and balances built into the process, and I think that's what we need, because at the end of the day, the mayor will not be able to work effectively if they do not have the confidence of local government and business partners that they're working alongside, and that's why those checks and balances are so important.
Fantastic, thank you. Other thoughts, comments, questions from people? Yes.
Sorry for coming in late.
That's okay.
Very annoying if I say something that's already been discussed. Really interesting on the front page, isn't it, that the top five things that the public want aren't powers. Is that a cause for thought question? I'll just leave that one for you. It's really interesting that the public don't think they're the things that the mayor should have. Second point, education skills. You'd obviously expect me to comment on that.
Sorry, would you just say who you are? I'm sure everybody knows.
Tori Lewis, Middlesbrough College.
Thanks.
Yeah. Education skills, key priority, no doubt about that. I spend a lot of time talking about how education should change, get more close to industry, should adapt, should be more coherent, so on and so forth. A lot of the evidence shows a couple of things. One is, sadly, our workforce needs are exactly the same as our education levels, so 42% of jobs in Tees Valley don't require education above a level 2.
Yeah.
That's what we're producing through our education establishments.
Yeah.
So the job creation needs are exactly the same as the educational needs. It's not rocket science. If you bring more jobs in, if you bring higher level jobs in, people will move into the area. That's what happened in the 70s and the 80s. So I would love to see bigger industrial strategy that spanned the Tees Valley, that was lifted up to the combined authority, that didn't worry about geography, that brought more and better jobs into Teesside, that could then be underpinned by the education skills system. Ultimately, I think cutting back also to some of the complaints that we get from employers, and I probably spend 80% of my life now in front of employers and with employers, understanding that environment. We're second only to Spain in the OECD countries in investing in skills in England, in UK, and that's where a lot of the issues are. Now the levy's coming in, that may change. So it isn't just about education, although it is, and I'm not at all abrogating the responsibilities there. And school performance is about job creation and investment in skills, not just through the schools, but also by employers.
So there's a lot.
I can see that's in there, but I just think it's very, very focused on colleges, very, very focused on schools. It must be alongside job creation and training investment by employers.
Absolutely. And that's that demand side, isn't it? So, you know, not just through the jobs, but from the jobs you've got.
Yeah.
great point. I'll come back to the panel with that. Any other kind of questions or comments? Yeah, just here.
Sorry, David Walker, I'll get back to physical regeneration. Specific question. The DuPont Corporation has been set up, South Tees Corporation, seems to be focused, as an edge against South Tees, and focused on SSI. Mm. It doesn't seem at the moment to cover the entire combined authority geographical area. I'm just picking up on that last point. One of the key roles of that organisation will be to go out, find investment, inward investment, encouraging investment in the area. And there's a potential mismatch between focusing activity in one part of the combined authority when that could be the detriment of the other parts of the combined authority. So is there a plan to actually bring in a DOC corporation across the whole of the combined authority?
Okay, great question. And I suppose that raises... I'll ask a question in a minute, sorry. Any other questions from the floor before I ask my question there? Anything else, your last chance? Yeah, just here, and just one at the back.
I guess I was going to, as I look at it, my name is Joe Dancy, I work as a consultant here, as I see part of this, it is around, we know that proposals for the mayor isn't the same, similar to what they have in Scotland, or what they have in Wales, or in London, so... We appreciate we have asymmetric devolution within the UK, but the ability for the new mayor and a new mayor here to be able to wield the power and actually a voice. You know, I can think on projects that I'm working on where you have very active members of parliament or members from councils or the combined authority and other actors, but where you can see, for example, in industrial policy, the advantage for Wales to have a First Minister in addition to very active members of Parliament is of course a great boon. And I guess what is the opportunity we have, what regional issues and how will we work with other mayors particularly on tackling issues that we have? I mean, you can look at something like Scotland and its potential for reducing airport tax.
Mm.
How does that impact Newcastle Airport? How does that impact Tees Valley?
Yeah.
So how do the two mayors here in Tees Valley and the North East cooperate? And where actually will they... I look at the referendum from a couple of years ago. This was a time of great uncertainty for the Scots, but for companies who want certainty, actually, for a place like Tees Valley or Newcastle to say, come down the road, actually you're not going to lose your market of 50 million English people. It was cited in a business park here in Tees Valley, whereas we're taking this risk in Scotland. And separate to sort of making Teesside's case as opposed to other areas and regions is also the importance of the mayors collectively to offer that wider collaboration, to say to Westminster and Whitehall that actually this is now time for you to devolve these extra areas to us. And I don't equate devolution in the UK to devolution to the federal system in the US, but the power of mayors there, or the power of governors to say this should be within our remit. And actually, you may have a chancellor now who, whatever degree you think he's doing it, is arguing for a northern powerhouse, but want the civil servants to know that he will move on.
Yes.
Wait this out, and we'll let this all dissipate. I think that's the challenge that we can't let happen.
Great, So there's stuff there about kind of mayors acting collectively, about kind of taking advantage of what's happening elsewhere as an opportunity for the Tees Valley, but also making sure this doesn't dissipate. Last question at the back.
Yes. The Tees Valley is a beautiful place to live. We've got beautiful countryside, woodlands, coast.
And would you say who you are?
Towns. And what I'd like to see the mayor also concentrate, as well as our industrial heritage and our industrial future, is also our tourism and visitor economy, and become a real ambassador to lead visitors to this area.
Great.
Okay, granted, it isn't Costerdale, Tees Valley here, but there is very appropriate routes of tourism for us to drive forward, and we should also reflect that in our transportation as well.
And sorry, would you say who you are?
Sorry, I'm Ward Maynard, Background Lead in Borough Council.
Fantastic, thank you. Some great questions there, and I suppose my one as well was your thoughts on the mayor will need to make some trade-offs. You know, it's likely the money is limited, we know that. So there will be some tough decisions to make about where do you put investment and how do you make sure that wherever you put investment, there are benefits for everywhere, but you're clear about what the timescales are and what that looks like. And I think that will be one of the challenges for all mayors. And certainly for this new role, without the public engagement we'd suggest there needs to be more of. So I'd be interested in your thoughts on how do they manage that? There's a real tension there. How do they avoid jam spreading everything so everyone gets the same and you don't get the change? But also making sure that where you do make decisions about investments, there's a clear sense of how that's going to help the area as a whole. So that's my abuse of the chair position, and I will stop now. But I think we've had questions about the point about the fact that some of the priorities are not what the mayor can do, which is, I think stands as its own, on its own as a point, and the kind of need for demand side, so the kind of the need for the demand side and actually more high-level jobs, more demand from employers, the fact that there's a potential mismatch, which I think links up to some degree with my question about how, you know, the trade-offs and how you manage those. There's the point about making the most of the mayors as a collective and making sure that actually this is an agenda that continues. And then there's something about tourism and the visitor economy. What I'd like to do is rather than be mean like last time and make Sue answer the North East question, for example, could I get you each just answer a couple of those points? I will start with Rachel, we'll go to John, and then and end with Sue. So if you could just briefly respond to a couple of those points, that would
sure,
be great.
Certainly. I think, just before you came in the room, the first thing I'd said is first priority for a mayor is an industrial strategy. we are as one. And yes, absolutely, that will drive higher level skills. I think there's a lot of responsibility on employers as well, and I don't think they're particularly stepping up to that responsibility as yet, and I think there's a lot of employers that do recognise that. That said, I think there's an awful lot of confusion that we've got in skills policy, in business rates policy, in as many policies as you want to name at the moment, that there's a lot that we don't know. And I think, you know, until we get some more clarity from government and we haven't got the distraction of the thing that we said we wouldn't mention in 9 days' time, then I think, you know, we can't start sort of knitting it all together until we're a lot clearer on that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I think in terms of development cooperation and sort of focusing on other parts of the Tees Valley, yes, I think we should, and I think it should be wide. I think the development cooperation that we've got is set up to cope with a particular issue at the moment, and that's what we do with a kathunking and very contaminated SSI site that is potentially going to be a huge driver for the Tees Valley economy. And yeah, absolutely, we need to set that at the moment. But if you look at the MDC, and it goes back to what I've just previously said about there are some things we don't know yet, looking at what planning powers that might have. If you take a site maybe like something like the airport site, where all of a sudden you can change some of the goalposts on planning, actually you might start to drive some things there. We'll stick faith with that at the moment. and I think also, proposals for the mayors to stick together, particularly on things like APD, where we've all got a common interest, and particularly if we do get another Scottish referendum, I think that there has to be, and I would be astounded if you got mayors that wouldn't say that they would work together on that. My worry is that some of that need to work together might come as quickly as 10 days' time. Yeah. And because George Osborne is our key champion as a Northern powerhouse, and if he goes, the Northern powerhouse may well get pushed into a back cupboard in Whitehall, because I can't see Boris or Michael Gove being particularly interested in it. And so I think there is an issue there, and the sooner we get our heads round, it's in all our interest to lobby on this, yeah, better.
Great. So. Thank you. John, having said I wouldn't direct, I'd be particularly interested in your thoughts on that point about kind of the collective mayors and mm-hmm. how you might kind of keep making the most of the case for this and the trade-offs point as well, given your experience.
Right. Well, I think the first point is that all devolution agendas over the last 20, 30 years have been joined up, collaborative, devolved initiatives, have been linked with key ministers. And I've done a lot of research for the Cabinet Office, worked on various government decentralisation agendas, and a lot of the impetus comes from key ministers. And there are a number of departments that are really important for devolution who look at universal national standards like education, health, DWP, and they're not really terribly interested. And the moment the pressure is taken off, all the rhetoric about devolution dissipates.
Yeah.
So that's why I emphasised for the mayor, a key dimension is to think about how to mobilise the voice of Teesside alongside all those other interests, common interests, to address what I think the elephant in the room is, apart from Brexit, is the north-south divide and the power of London and the south-east. Mm-hmm. And frankly, it's no good having city regions competing against each other without addressing a rebalancing of economic growth across the country.
Yeah.
And that is a critical thing for Teesside as well as everywhere else. So I think it's crucial the mayors get together. But what we don't want is what David Cameron said, which is he was exploring the possibility of a cabinet subcommittee of mayors. Now, the problem with that is we don't have mayors covering every part of England, which is 80% of the UK's population. And this is, the real gap, is the constitutional resolution has not been sorted.
Mm.
As has been said, each of the devolved nations in London has a single voice, not only in Whitehall, but also, I know Brexit might make this irrelevant, but it's highly emphasised in Europe, where each of the devolved nations has got a minister battling for Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland. But in England, we have loads of civil servants who are tossing around the priorities of the South West versus the North East versus Scotland on European funding.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we don't have a clear single voice. And the mayors on their own are not the answer. And the devolution settlement at the moment is not the solution to this bigger issue. I'm not saying we're against city regions and mayors, but we need another level. And that's where the mayors need to get on with it, because the imbalance in public expenditure in Scotland particularly, and the North East, which is the same size as Scotland, which has an economy that's doing better than the North East, is really shocking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very powerful points. Thank you. Sue, I will give the last word to you. Interested, we haven't answered the question on kind of tourism and the visitor economy, but also your reflections on some of those trade-offs.
Yeah, can I do trade-offs first? Mm. I mean, I think it's a really interesting point about trade-offs. And I know as a local authority leader, when I go to a combined authority meeting, I have to take off my local authority hat and put on my combined authority hat and think Tees Valley wide. That is difficult. It's very difficult to do. One of the advantages that the mayor will have is that they will have a Tees Valley wide hat on all the time.
Yes.
And that will make a huge difference to their ability to be able to guide decision making in the combined authority. And I think that will be really important. However, I would say within that, and this is one of the points that nobody's picked up, that one of the first things that the mayor might want to think about is actually instigating a proper research and intelligence unit back for the Tees Valley, because we haven't got that at the moment. And what we're going to need is evidence-based policy and investment decisions going forward, and that's going to be really, really important. So I think I would probably put that on my top list of three if I was going to go back and do the starting bit again. I think it will help the trade-off issue. Just a couple of points in relation to the other issues. I do just want to say about the David's point about the Merrill Development Corporation. The one for the SSI site, the South Tees, is for the South Tees area, the 4.5 miles plus the SSI site, is just one. And as has been said by Rachel, it is looking at that area. We have within the devolution plans proposals for a land commission, which in turn will think about what other areas within the Tees Valley need to be brought under a mayoral development corporation, be that another one
or more. I mean, we have very ambitious plans for development associated with that that I talked about at the beginning. 20,000 new homes by 2026, £3 billion worth of private sector investment over 10 years, and the development of an investment vehicle of the sort that John previously spoke about, and using that £15 million and indeed other money to best advantage to generate income, to be able to invest in property and homes and that sort of thing across the Tees Valley. So that's going to be a crucial part of what we do, and there's a lot more thought to go on that yet. But we are very, very excited to the fact that we do not want to see the SSI, or the South Tees Development Corporation, become a black hole for investment in the Tees Valley. That must not happen. Mm. And we know that. And government needs to be absolutely clear that it has to invest separately in the SSI site, because that's its responsibility. It allowed that to happen, and it needs to do something about that. So that's absolutely clear. Just a couple more very quick points. In terms of how will the mayors get together to do stuff, it's already happening. We've got Transport for the North, which covers the three northern regions, looking at transport priorities. That's work being done on a northern strategic economic assessment. We're talking, there is talk about organisation on a greater north basis. The governance of that, how that might work, I don't know. But I think there is an ambition that recognises that if we're going to compete with the Scotlands, the Wales and the European regions, then we probably need to be bigger than we are. Tees Valley is the smallest city region as things stand, 650,000. You know, we can do it. It makes us fleet of foot. It gives us access to tables and places at tables we wouldn't have otherwise. But we will need to combine with others for other things, and we need to keep our minds open to that. And I personally believe, you know, we've seen initiatives in the past like the Northern Way that had real potential to do stuff for transport, and we need to do more of that sort of stuff going forward. Tourism and the visitor economy. Carl, I said right at the beginning, you know, how crucial that is. It's about the image of the Tees Valley, isn't it? It's about who we are and what we are. And culture, and Dave knows much more about this than I do, but culture is crucial. If we're going to have an effective economy and grow our economy well, then we've got to get our cultural offer right as well. And we've got to use and utilise our resources that we have that are about the nice places and make people want to come, live, stay, do their business here. And we've got plenty of it. We just don't make the most of it at the moment. And that's really very much what we've got to do. And the last one on skills and jobs, we've got set ourselves a target of 25,000 new jobs, 50% of those at level 4. We haven't got the system to deliver that at the moment, and we've got to do something about it, and that's going to be an absolutely crucial priority for us going forward. And, you know, our skills board is a start on that, but at the end of the day, you need somebody, I think you said it, Rachel, to knock heads together in the skills sector, don't you? Sorry, I don't mean to be unkind.
Thank you. It's been, I've really enjoyed chairing this. It's been a really interesting debate. And I think some consensus and some areas that clearly are really up for debate. You know, there's certainly a consensus about making the most of the strategic powers on offer and the scale that offers around transport, around industrial strategy, yeah, around skills, around kind of creating more demand and a kind of clear ambition, I think, emerging. I think the mayor, whoever he or she is, you know, that there's no doubting the ambition of the area and for the area. A lot about that confidence, about that image, about mobilising the assets you've got and the voice of the Tees Valley. And I think some kind of big issues as well that will be, as you've all said, a bit sooner than the mayor, which is around making sure the Northern Powerhouse continues, yes, which is making sure that, yeah, and I think what was striking is the pragmatism. You've said, you know, mayors might not be what everybody wants, but what you want is the powers, and yeah, what you're doing is making the most of them. And I think there is something about whether this momentum will continue and making sure it does. And certainly from the Centre for Cities, we're keen that happens. And, you know, the research and intelligence point, dealing with the trade-offs, thinking through that how that happens at a local level, but at a national level, arguing for keeping these powers and growing them, I think is critical. Yeah. Certainly from the Centre for Cities perspective, I mean, so all our stuff is available for free and it's online, and we're keen to kind of keep doing more. And if you've got ideas about things we can do, please let me know. We want this to be a big debate about what the mayors should do, how they can make the most of things. We'll do more polling in March. But, you know, if there's other things we can be doing, please do talk to us. And we've got not enough research and intelligence, but we've got some online. We've done some stuff on Middlesbrough recently. So anything we can do to help, do let us know. But thank you all so much for coming this evening, to the panellists for some really interesting contributions, and a lot for me to think about, hopefully a lot for you to think about, and hopefully the start of a lot more conversations. Thank you all very much. Please will you join me thanking the panellists.